This is The Guardian.
Die KI-Teammitglieder von Asana können Echtzeitdaten abrufen, damit die Arbeit planmäßig läuft und die Teams intelligenter und schneller arbeiten. Asana, die führende Plattform für KI-gestütztes Workmanagement. Jetzt kostenlos testen auf asana.com.
This week we're in Birmingham, where last year the city council announced that it was effectively bankrupt.
Birmingham is officially broke. Services for more than 1.1 million people are now under threat.
As well as years of austerity, the main reasons for this were the cost of providing equal pay claims, a new IT system, and financial mismanagement. The scale of the resulting cuts is truly eye-watering. £300 million over 2 years, with more still to come. And Birmingham is not the only English local authority on the brink. What will happen if Rachel Reeves fails to significantly help councils in her budget next week? I'm John Harris, and you're listening to Politics Weekly UK for The Guardian. We're outside the HQ of Birmingham City Council, the biggest local authority in Western Europe, and we're surrounded by really, really grand civic buildings. These huge, imposing Victorian structures that really speak volumes about a level of confidence, you know, the idea that this was a really significant, important place. But I would imagine in the offices here, a lot of what they're going to be thinking about right now is about the budget. And what Rachel Reeves is or isn't going to do to help this city and plenty of other places which are in a similar predicament. Although Birmingham's position is really, really awful. Last year, the City Council issued what's called a Section 114 notice, which is effectively a declaration of bankruptcy. And in March this year, the City Council put through completely eye-watering cuts of £300 million. Over 2 years. Now, what that means is clear. Streetlights are going to be dimmed. Bin collections are going to become fortnightly. There are increases in burial costs. Most viscerally, this city is already in the midst of huge spending cuts to adult social care, children's services, museums, libraries, culture. It's in the middle of a huge crisis. And the question then is, when the Chancellor gets up to deliver the budget, what's she going to do about this place?
Here we go.
We're in Acox Green, a suburb of southeast Birmingham, where a minibus is about to drop off 18-year-old Adam from school.
You're right with us being here.
Adam has special educational needs. Until earlier this year, the cost of his transport was covered by Birmingham City Council.
There was some issue at school with the book.
So the minibus that Adam is in that brings him home from school is just turning around at the bottom of the cul-de-sac. So what we are looking at here on one level is a vehicle going up a suburban street in Acox Green. But what this really is about the most urgently needed public service you can imagine. That's what that is. Getting Adam on and off the bus is a big undertaking, and both his parents, Abdul and Sabiha, have to be here. There is a lot of news coverage about Birmingham City Council effectively being bankrupt and putting through these huge cuts. But for you, those things are very, very real, right? Tell me why.
Because we are suffering the consequences of those cuts. And when they talk about those with the broadest shoulders bearing, you know, the worst and the brunt of it, it's not them. It's actually us that are bearing the brunt of it.
So what's happened to you? Tell me.
So earlier this year, my son, who has always had door-to-door transport for the 10 years that he's been at the setting, there were no changes to our circumstances. Birmingham City Council brought in a new transport policy, which effectively meant that he was no longer eligible because he was just unfortunate enough to be fallen in the 16 to 19 cohort.
And what was the policy? They suddenly either drastically cut what or took away free transport or transport of any kind?
They took away what we call specialist transport, so door-to-door transport from the 16 to 19 cohort because of the legal loophole. So when the age of education was raised to 18, it didn't include transport.
Right.
And somebody very cleverly left it at each local authority's discretion. So that gave Birmingham complete autonomy and agency to do whatever they wanted with that.
So they threatened to take your son's transport away. And that, what would that have meant? You couldn't go to school, presumably.
They more than threatened it. They did take it away. Yeah, so instead of...
Sir Behar puts the cost to the council of Adam's transport at around £18,000 a year, but she was offered 45p a mile to cover the costs or alternatives that were completely unsuitable. After a lengthy and distressing back and forth with the council over the summer, she finally managed to get them to provide a minibus.
But it took up my entire summer break, time that I should be spending with my son, that was taken up by this battle. And I'm quite cross and hurt about that, because that's something that I can't get back.
What did it feel like, though, receiving word that they were going to take his provision, his transport provision away?
It's like the floor has just gone from beneath you. There's just like a big pit that swallowed you, because having experience of battling SEND services, you just know that you're in for the fight of your life, and that it's so important, because for somebody like my young man, it isn't only his education he's accessing at his specialist setting, he's accessing his therapies, he's accessing social, emotional input. Like, he would be cut off, he would be imprisoned in his own home.
Right. And Adam's situation now is that he has got school transport, but it's sort of fragile, right? Is that right?
So it's precarious. We've been given it on a spare seat policy basis that if a compulsory school age child between the age of 5 and 16 needs that seat, then Adam would have to give it up.
That can happen at any time.
That can happen at any time. So you're there with that black cloud looming over your head. And also, we will have to make a voluntary contribution. So even where they do award door-to-door transport for the 16 to 19 cohort, it does come with a price tag of over £1,000 voluntary contribution. And yet still, we don't know. At any day, we could just get the call to say, well, he doesn't have it anymore.
I'm a special needs parent, you see, and I know that feeling. It's one of the cruelest ways that the special needs system very often works, is that every time the phone rings, if you're in one of those situations where you're worried about your provision, and you know how necessary it is, every time the phone rings, you think, that might be the council saying, oh, we're going to have to stop it.
Yeah. It's not the care of my young people that's slowly suffocating me. It's this constant fight for the services that they're entitled to.
That rings very true. It's the budget coming up. And we all know these gaps in special needs spending, that councils are running deficits. They always talk about it as overspending, but it seems to me that it's underfunding, really, or obviously. I mean, there's Birmingham City Council, but then there's central government, yeah, right? And the Department for Education. Do you have a sense of what you want?
Money's going to have to be spent. And, you know, it's that famous quote by Gandhi that the measure of a society is how well it looks after its most vulnerable. The axe always falls on the most vulnerable. You know, it's always the first place that you see the cuts are being made. But actually, it's very short-term thinking, because there's going to be a long-term impact of not funding these services properly and streamlining them and taking money out of them.
Looking into the future, we both know the scale of cuts that Birmingham Council has announced. Because your next stop is adult social care, isn't it?
Yep.
For your son.
Yeah. And all adult services. And obviously, I am petrified. You know, we just had the announcement last week that the 4 of the 9 day centres in the city will be closed. And so you're sort of thinking, actually, the services that my young person is going to need going into adulthood are already being culled. And so actually the battle that I've had with children's services is just going to be exacerbated once you get to adult services. And parents will say to me, there'll be nothing left by the time we get there, which is a very genuine fear. Because when there is nothing left, the buck stops with us. If there is no day centre provision, if there is nowhere for Adam to go, he will be at home with me.
Well, that really hits home, having that sort of experience of meeting people in that position. You always have a sense that there's you and your kind of everyday life and your sort of human needs. And then there's this sort of cold machine somewhere that decides who gets what. And if you're in a situation where your council goes bankrupt, I think the contrast between those two things just becomes huge. You know, 4.5 miles over there, a set of council offices, and someone is making decisions that turn people's lives upside down. And they got enough to cope with already. Yeah, we shouldn't live in a country where that stuff happens.
Yeah, it's good to see you, John.
Labour's Liam Byrne has been a Birmingham MP for 20 years. He believes the failure to save the city council from going bust was in part political.
I mean, I have seen clips of you 6 years ago talking about what you called the battering of Brum, right? And to some extent, I suppose, some of that is the same battering that lots and lots of places have experienced. But your view is also that Birmingham, in certain respects, has been singled out. That in some ways, that's a deliberate battering of Birmingham. That's right, isn't it?
I do, because, you know, it's like the Labour government in Wales. Through the ABC, the austerity, the Brexit, the chaos of the last, you know, 5 or 6 years of the Conservative government. And Birmingham is the biggest local authority in Europe, was singled out as a Labour-controlled place, and they needed to tell a story about how Labour was failing. And so, you know, we literally became a bit part in the Punch and Judy show of Tory politics. And the people who were taking these decisions were utterly oblivious to the impact of what their decisions were doing to the texture of people's lives. And, you know, you would sort of have these questions and debates and arguments in the House of Commons. And you would just look at these people. They just didn't care. They just didn't understand. I mean, it was just awful.
Well, here we are. And although austerity in terms of local services is still happening after years and years and years everywhere, as you say, Birmingham has a particularly severe and, as you see it, sadistic dose of it to cope with. Do you think the council and therefore the city can recover from this?
The thing that worries me most is the impact on young people. So for as long as I've been the MP, we've tried to do school gate surgeries every fortnight, because we tend to find that primary school teachers have the best radar. Think things that are going wrong in any community show up on the desks of a primary school head teacher before anywhere else. You know, and what we see right now, Birmingham is one of the youngest cities in Europe, as you know. But we have the worst youth unemployment in the country. And we have now, post-COVID, a really serious issue with special educational needs provision in the city. So on average, schools in my constituency have about 27% of their children with special educational needs. Many of those needs are getting so acute now that head teachers are literally having to fire teaching assistants in order to free up the budgets to accommodate and provide a decent education to children with special educational needs.
Over a third of the population of Birmingham is under 25. It's a city renowned for its nightlife, arts and music. But the council plans to cut arts funding totally in 2025 to 26.
So you grew up in Birmingham?
I did. I grew up in Handsworth and Hockley.
Michaela Makusha is a recently graduated 22-year-old journalist who's written a lot about Birmingham's cuts. We meet her outside the partially closed Museum of Birmingham, where she used to work.
So you feel a very strong sort of loyalty and affinity with Birmingham. This is your home.
Yeah, it's just a city full of memories, and it's a great city because we all know it's the second city of England.
How does Birmingham compare now to the city it was maybe 10, 15 years ago? What's changed?
Well, there are definitely like improvements. So this whole area has been built up from like when I was a kid. More modern now, but then a lot of the youth services and a lot of the community services have been depleted.
Well, they've been cut,
yeah,
right?
Well, yeah, they've been cut. We had austerity, and then, of course, now the council's bankrupt, which is really sad. It's when you kind of, like, drive past places, and you're like, oh, that place used to be open, now it's closed, and, like, it used to be a community centre or something like that.
And what do you think those cuts to arts and culture will mean for life in the city when Birmingham is living without a lot of those things?
It just makes the city bleaker in a way, because so much of Birmingham is like our culture. Like everybody knows about Birmingham because we have like this strong like cultural background, whether it's through music, whether it's through like our amazing museums, our TV and films that are made here, you know, famously Peaky Blinders. All of that kind of comes together and kind of makes the city what it is. Like, we're not the city without our book festivals, without our library, without all these like small things that, again, I don't think people in government sometimes think are important to life. what makes us human and what makes us people are the arts and culture right. of the city.
Right. So you're 22. You and a lot of your friends will be thinking about where you're going to live, where you're going to kind of start decisively your adult life. Mm-hmm. Where does Birmingham sit in the midst of that?
I go to Manchester a lot to see, like, friends and stuff, and I'm like, I might end up moving to Manchester because it's, again, so much more built up, and also it's just more vibrant in a way where I'm just like, I enjoy being there. We love the city, but it's also, like, because a lot of us are in creative fields anyway, so do we even want to be here if those places aren't going to be available for us to work in?
We'll pause here. When we come back, we'll be in Ladywood, visiting a women's centre, which is many people's last line of defence against the cuts. This is a consequential budget. It really is a big deal. And one of the reasons it's a big deal, you really feel when you come here, is to do with the fact that if these financial gaps in people's local services aren't filled pretty quickly, then I think people's sense of disconnection and their cynicism towards politics and politicians are probably going to get worse, right? And we've had quite a large dose of that in recent years. I think some of that fed into Brexit, probably Scottish independence. It's the reason why Nigel Farage won't go away. It's important, you know, if people step outside the house and see litter everywhere and a broken down park and a shut down library, that's not good news for mainstream politics, right? And the idea that mainstream politics matters. And that's why I think the stakes for Rachel Reeves are actually really, really high. So we're going to a women's centre now, where the amount of work that they really have to do to help people has sort of skyrocketed in recent years.
Hello, is it Frankie?
Yeah, nice to
meet
you.
Hi.
This is John.
Hi, John.
Nice
hi.
To meet you.
And you?
Mashkura Begum is the chair of trustees at Sathi House, a large Victorian building right next to Aston Villa's stadium. For almost 50 years now, it's been run as a day centre for local women, but in recent years, it's had to really adapt to growing local need, including now running a food bank.
It's an old Victorian house, and as I said, we're outgrowing our space. You know, we have over 100 women coming through, and that's just behind there is Aston Park, which has the iconic Jacobean Aston Hall. So, that, you know, people from all over the country come to visit this grand, you know, sort of, you know, home. Aston Villa is just there. Yet, families around here are just sort of, you know, struggling to make ends meet.
Yeah, what does a typical day look like?
Monday to Saturday, we have various activities. So, in particular, we're really oversubscribed at the moment with our digital skills workshop, literacy, numeracy, and language. Women who really sort of, you know, have got very basic knowledge about the language, we put them onto a program. And then we also focus on leadership. Our biggest issue is capacity now in terms of, you know, space.
There's more people want to come here and benefit from what you do than you can fit in.
We could fit in. But also, we really need to think about, because majority of our staff are from the local area. They also see and feel the devastation that's happening around them. So we need to think about their well-being
as well. That's another word. You said devastation.
Yes.
That's an accurate word.
It's an accurate word because they see the cuts. Families can't afford basic food, but also heating is a huge issue. You know, utility bills.
Words like devastation aren't an exaggeration.
No, it's not. You know, using words like destitution, these are actually real people's lives, and that's how they feel.
How old were you when you started coming?
About 8.
Were you?
Yes. So this is the kitchen area. This is open. This is where our food, our last part of the stuff, sort of, you know. So this.
Well, that's where the feedback.
Yeah. So we keep it locked. Yeah.
So this is, I can see straight away. This is somewhere that you store food for a start that people desperately need.
Yeah.
So there's packets of rice here. tin pulses and all that. But then also there's things people need to cook, right?
Yes, yeah. And in these boxes are slow cookers, heated blankets and so forth. These have been, you know, donated by various large organisations.
Well, so you're helping people live in the most basic ways.
Absolutely.
To make sure they can cook and keep warm.
Absolutely.
And they got food to eat.
Yes, yes.
God, so if you weren't here, there would be all these sort of basic gaps in people's lives, right? In the most fundamental ways.
I don't know any other organisation within the Square Mile that does similar work to ours. So, you know, as a result of the cuts and resources nationally, locally, even other community organisations have actually had to close shop. So there's a very few handful of organisations doing what we're doing. And the only reason we're actually still here is, A, we're really fortunate we own our own building. Right. So we haven't got overheads because of that reason. But also we've had to be really lean as an organisation, be really agile. And just to sort of show, this room actually used to be a gym. So we had treadmills here, cycling. During COVID, we had to close because of, you know, obvious reasons. And then we realised we needed the space for other things.
Yes. What a story. That says it all.
Exactly.
But it used to be a gym and now it's a space for
because
food.
Although there's a time and a place for that,
yeah.
But this was more of a need for our community. So it's an emergency. Oh. So we had to sort of do that.
You're in a city where the council's bankrupt, right?
Yes,
and so it's inevitably retreating, isn't it? It's sort of pulling away. That's bound to happen. And is it right, therefore, that there's lots of gaps that you're having to fill?
I think the council has really been struggling for the last decade. Although, you know, in the last year or so, it's come to a tipping point for us as a city. So we've been picking up pieces for the last, you know, at least for the last 5-6 years. Public services in Birmingham has really, really sort of shrunk over the last year or so. And that's put a huge pressure on our resources here.
See, these things very often are talked about in the abstract,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes.
They just get reduced to budget figures and
yes,
all
yeah.
of that, right?
Yes, yeah.
But we're talking, I would imagine you're talking about people who are hungry sometimes, right? People who are homeless. Is that right?
Not sometimes, a lot of the times.
Right.
The families we see, they're hungry a lot of the time. So they're actually cutting corners, probably having one proper meal a day. And we're seeing that regularly. We're having to sort of innovate and think on our feet to support the communities around here. And that's as a direct result of, you know, the cuts in the city.
When you heard that the council had filed a Section 114 notice, that it was that the city was effectively declaring itself bankrupt, How did you feel?
It was really depressing. And in particular, in the back of, you know, the year before, we had the Commonwealth Games here, which was an amazing one or 2 weeks that we've had. But I think there was a lot of mixed feelings about spending so much money on the Games when we knew this was eventually going to happen. As an organisation, we've never relied on city funding, so it didn't impact us. But we knew we would have had to, you know, pick up the pieces.
Can you point to cuts that the council has made, which have consequences, which you then pick up?
Yes. Directly, for instance, three of the local libraries have closed. And in a community like this, where, you know, a lot of families, they don't have internet at home, they used to use the library very, very sort of frequently to either access information, fill in forms and so forth. That's gone now. And also, that was a safe space for them because at home it's overcrowded. So that's one example.
What, another one?
Youth services. Yes. So youth centres. So the local youth centres have closed.
Pause there.
Yes, yeah.
Because that's really sobering and upsetting to consider that, right? So youth centres that used to be open a lot and A, would give young people something to do, but also there'd be people there who could pick up problems and issues among those young people. What, they've shut completely?
More or less. Right. More or less. So you're standing here in Aston at the moment. We're adjacent to Aston Villa Football Club. It's a very young neighbourhood, young people. It's, you know, it's got one of the highest crime rates. And then you have an issue like the local youth centres closing. It's a recipe for disaster. A lot of these young people, they weren't only going there to sort of, you know, play football, some activities, but they used to get a lot of mentoring, one-to-one support, which in essence would help them, you know, perform better at school. Keep them in school, you know, all that pastoral support that they don't normally get at school, they were getting that at these youth centres. But that's all gone now, or almost going.
And are you seeing the results then of that pastoral care not being there already?
We're already seeing that. I mean, you know, it's almost like this generation of young people are almost forgotten. You know, young people not having much to do during the summer breaks, yeah. school holidays, yeah. you just see them congregating on street corners. You see a rise in knife crime. Often that is related to boredom, especially for young men, turf wars, postcode wars and so forth. And by not having, you know, youth workers on the ground doing outreach work, that's just going to get worse.
Last question. You personally, why do you do what you do? Why do you do this?
I think for me, you know, a place like Saathi House gave me that enabling opportunity. So it's really important for us that we sort of pass that on. And if not us, who? So that's really important for us to be able to be that, you know, anchor,
to
be able to support our communities. So it's about stepping up at the right time and rather than ask questions, just actually, you know, roll our sleeves and play your part.
Thank you so much. There's a strong sense here of being only a couple of miles from the city centre, but the distance between the two places in all sorts of ways being enormous. And as public services get cut and the state retreats, you know, that distance gets even greater. I mean, that's what social exclusion means. What are you excluded from? You're excluded from that city centre over there. It feels really disorientating. But also, I'm amazed and it's sort of humbled somehow by seeing what people do to fill the gaps that have just been left and have got bigger and bigger and bigger over the last 14 or 15 years. I mean, what a symbolic thing. A room that was once a gym now has food and cooking equipment for people who are hungry. You know, that's it. Here's the Birmingham MP, Liam Byrne, again. Very directly, what do you fear will happen to Birmingham and other places if we don't find a way of giving the city the money, let's be honest, that it needs?
What will really happen is that there will be a generation of children growing up simply not able to achieve the full measure of their potential. It will be a sad and very often silent loss. You will see the organised crime groups grow in influence. Their viciousness will spread, and the years ahead will be punctuated with acute moments of disorder as distress bursts onto the streets. And you cannot do and sustain what is happening to Birmingham for years and years to come without running each of those risks. And, you know, all of us worry about that in our darkest moments.
Thank you to Sabiha, Abdul and Adam Aziz, Michaela Makusha, Mashkora Begum and the staff at Saathi House, and Liam Byrne. In reference to Sabiha Aziz's case, Birmingham Council have said, "The council has maintained a level of support that enables families to make their own arrangements and has been providing additional support to our most vulnerable students and families." Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, make sure you subscribe to Politics Weekly UK wherever you get your podcasts. And even better, leave us a review. Before you go, there have been two big stories this week that our sister podcast Today in Focus has covered. Firstly, the killing of Chris Cabot, the 24-year-old man shot by an armed police officer. Helen Pidd speaks to The Guardian's crime correspondent Vikram Dodd on that complex case. And Today in Focus Extra will be covering Labour's woes with Donald Trump. This episode was produced by Frankie Toby. The music is by Axel Kakoutier and the executive producers are Maz Ebtahaj and Nicole Jackson. Hello, this is John Harris from The Guardian's Politics Weekly UK podcast. The team and me travel across the country to speak to people about their lives and politics and the gap between the two things. Taking that approach, obviously, costs money. The Guardian isn't funded by billionaires or shareholders. It's funded by our readers and listeners, so every penny counts. To help keep our reporting in touch with reality and independent, please consider supporting us. Click the link in the podcast description. Thank you.
This is The Guardian.
Mit Asana ist KI nicht mehr nur ein Tool, sondern ein Teammitglied. Jetzt hilft Asana AI Ihnen, Ihre Ziele besser zu erreichen und verknüpft Sie mit relevanten Projekten, damit alles planmäßig verläuft. So So arbeiten ihre Teams intelligenter und schneller. Asana, die führende Plattform für KI-gestütztes Workmanagement. Jetzt kostenlos testen auf asana.com. asana.com.